And I'm really debating tonight. So at the last minute, I was thinking, we're going to read verses 1 through 9. Guys, is where we're at in John 19. But I was thinking, before we launch into this, I might actually pull up the parallel passages and actually have us read Matthew's, Mark's, Luke's, and John's account, just to give a good picture overall of what's going on here with Jesus' trials. Let's start with John 19, 1 through 9, and that'll give me another second to decide if I want to do that or not. So, Mikel, we'll start with you. Everybody just take a verse. I do want you guys, let's do it this way. Let's do John 19, 1 through 9. I want you guys to think about things that jump out at you, and then you guys can give me some feedback, and then we can go from there and maybe read some of the other ones to connect a few of the missing pieces. So, Mikel, if you want to start John 19, verse 1.
Pilate then took Jesus and spoke.
The soldiers twisted together a crown of thorns and put it on his head and put a purple robe on him. And they began... Oh, no.
Then they began to come up to him and say, "Hail, King of the Jews," and to give him slaps in his face.
Therefore went forth again and said unto him, "Behold, I bring him forth to you, that you may know that I find no fight in him."
Then came Jesus forth, wearing the crown of thorns and the purple robe, and Pilate said unto him, "Behold the man."
So when the chief priests and officers saw him, they cried out, saying, "Crucify, crucify, Pilate." Pilate said to them, "Take him yourselves and crucify him, for I find no guilt in him."
The Jews answered him, "We have a law, and by that law he ought to die, because he made himself out to be the Son of God."
When Pilate therefore heard this statement, he was the more afraid.
And he entered into the praetorium again and said to Jesus, "Where are you from?" But Jesus gave him no answer.
Okay, so I'll give you guys a second. I know last time we kind of finished up the stuff from John 18. Big picture. You guys remember how many trials did Jesus go through that night? And on into the wee hours of the morning. What did you say? Three trials. So that consisted of, I mean, in some ways we could say more than three, but we're going to join together. We'll kind of join together Annas and Caiaphas, okay, the high priest. So Jesus was on trial before them. And then from there, he went to, you guys remember where he went from Annas and Caiaphas? He went to Pilate. Then Pilate found out where Jesus is from. He sent him over to Herod. And then Jesus had no interaction. I mean, Jesus didn't respond to Herod at all. Then Herod's the one who gave him the purple robe, dressed him, sent him back to Pilate, and that's kind of where we're going here. So one other big picture. What can you guys tell me? This is Carson, you're tempting me to call you out in class. what can you guys tell me before the high priest, what was the charge that ended up sticking with him? They gave him all sorts of, they were making all sorts of false accusations against him, like this man forbids people to pay taxes to Caesar and destroy this, you know, he's going to tear down this temple. And but which one stuck? Do you remember?
Where he claimed to be a king, being the king of the Jews.
Okay, that actually shows up here before Pilate. Which one, what stuck with him? What stuck on him on the one before the high priest? What? So he claimed to be the Son of God. If you guys think about it for a second, the Jews themselves, they're waiting for a king. They're waiting for the Messiah. Like, they're hoping for that. There's all these prophecies. So they don't, by this point in time, they're not buying that Jesus is him. But that charge in and of itself isn't gonna hold up and cause him to, you know, for them to be able to put him to death. But when he claimed to be the Son of God, like, that's what got them. To them, to the Jewish mind, that's blasphemy. You should worship the Lord your God and serve him only, right? And they missed some scriptures. We'll probably talk about a little bit later. as far as God was going to come in the flesh. Okay. But then we... Brad, go ahead.
Well, and then verse 8 there, you know, it's saying...
can you give me just a minute on that? So come back to that. But I just want to make sure we're getting from... So before the high priest and everything, the chief priest, the accusation that stuck is, you know, they ask him, are you the Son of God? And he said, you said it yourself. I am. And the high priest rips his robes and asks everybody there, okay, you guys have heard the blasphemy, what are you saying? And they say, he's deserving of death. Then they send him to Pilate. And what's the charge against in front of Pilate that sticks? Is that what you wanted to mention? Or is that something different? Okay, so we'll wait on yours. We'll get back to you in a second. What's the charge that stuck before Pilate? The king of the Jews. So let's think about from a Roman perspective. Do the Romans really have a problem with somebody claiming to be a son of God?
No.
I mean, Greek mythology, Roman mythology, hey, the gods could come down, half man, half God. Like, that's not any big deal. Actually, we see Pilate ends up getting a little afraid from that. Like, whoa, maybe this is... But that charge isn't going to hold anything before Pilate. So what they end up getting him on is the king of the Jews. And they politically, they put this pressure on Pilate to where he has to cave in because, as we're going to read on, anybody who makes himself out to be a king is no friend of Caesar. And so that's the charge against it. So I want you guys to just consider this. The charges for which Jesus was crucified, he confirmed both of those things, that he is the Son of God and that he is the king. He's the Messiah. You think about when we make the good confession, what is it that we say? Jesus is Lord is one way we say it. Sometimes we say it, what's another way we say it? Jesus is the... What'd you say? He's the king. Usually we might use a different word. Jesus is, sometimes we say, the Son of the living God. There's one other word that we say a lot. Jesus is the... Who said that? Christ. So Christ means... Christos is the Greek word for that. That means anointed one. When we're saying Jesus is the Christ, we're saying he's the king. So when we make the good confession, we are confessing the very things that Jesus confessed. That's actually why he was crucified. Okay? So that's kind of big picture leading into this. All right, Brad, go ahead. What did you notice from verse 8?
Yeah. He was the more afraid Pilate was. He was more afraid of.
Exactly.
I think it's clear in verse 7 what he does recognize.
Yeah, a little fear crept up in Pilate, I think, back at the end of 18 when they have this discussion and Jesus ends up saying, everybody who's of the truth hears my voice. And the question comes up. Pilate's like, well, what is truth? And kind of walks over. But he's got some... He initially starts by coming after Jesus, and pretty soon it's kind of like the trials turned on Pilate. And so, but now, when it says, because he made himself out to be the Son of God, Pilate's more afraid. Like, he's thinking... And then if you remember some other accounts that we might... I think we will read them, but... I don't know. We probably don't have time, really. Exactly. Pilate's wife had a dream about him and said, like, don't have anything to do with this guy. Like, don't mess with him. So we got all these things built in there. What other things jump out at you guys? Says Rich.
Well, along that same line, it's just, I mean, it shows that inside the breast of Pilate beat the heart of a politician.
Yes.
No way. He was afraid of Jesus. I think he saw what was going on, but yeah.
Yeah, I want to come back to that tonight, especially hopefully at the end to wrap something up. But twice, Pilate says here, like in this just this passage, twice he says, I find no guilt in him. He knows. If we would look at those other accounts, it's because of envy. He knows because of envy that they delivered him up. He's guiltless, but Pilate still ends up caving in to protect his own position. Anything else jump out at you guys in these verses? Mikhail.
So is it safe to say he's not afraid because for the reason really he should be, and that's he is actually talking to the Son of God. That's not why he's afraid. It's more of the problem he has on hand from all these different angles and what he's having to deal with, right? It's not for the right reason, I guess.
Well, it's interesting. So I think like Pilate's feeling pressure. These guys are saying he deserves to die because he said he's the Son of God. But I think Pilate bites a little bit here. And I think the fear is, like, what if he is? Because he comes in the next verse and he goes back into the praetorium and says to Jesus, where are you from? But Jesus gave him no answer. And then, it's like, we don't get to keep reading tonight, but if you keep reading...
But obviously he wasn't convinced, because why would he just... I mean, if you really thought it was him,
I would love to think so, but how many times in, I'll just say my own life, have I known and still caved in a moment? So, I don't think the full significance of it certainly didn't hit him. That's for sure.
Well, they're all dealing with the problem. They're missing the fact that, yeah, he's king, but there you've got the spiritual and the physical completely messed up.
Exactly.
The whole context and whatever.
Yes. Yeah, their hope's fixed on the physical. And so the spiritual doesn't have the value that it should. You know, and like I think we mentioned a few weeks ago, but Pilate has the opportunity. He's face to face with Jesus. When Jesus is talking to him about everybody's of the truth, here's my voice. And Jesus ends up saying, yes, I'm a king. For this I've been born. For this I've come into the world to bear witness of the truth. My kingdom's not this world. I mean, Pilate has one-on-one opportunity to be taught by Jesus Christ himself, the Son of God, and come to like acknowledgement of who he is. When he first asked Jesus, Jesus basically, my loose paraphrase is, well, are you curious about this yourself? You want to know? Or are you doing this because it's your job? You have to. He had the opportunity, and he didn't value the spiritual stuff enough to see it. So that is a good point. Anything else? Rich.
When Pilate brings him out, he's got the crown of thorns and the robe. And he says, behold the man. Now this is sort of a question too. I mean, I think everyone there realized something bad was going to happen. And it wasn't right. And it's easier to laugh at Jesus. They put the thorns on and the robe so that they can make a joke out of it and bring him down. Rather than trying to raise himself up to his level of thinking, they're going to break him down to our level where he's, you know, no big deal. He's just a man.
Beautiful point. Guys, your co-workers, what do they do? Like, I mean, isn't it a lot easier to make fun of, you know, laugh it off? You missed church last week. You got to go tomorrow. Oh, yeah, you better go. You're going to go to hell. You know, better pray twice as hard. You know, just it's a lot easier to joke around about everything
than to face
who he is. And that's played out here in Jesus. Man, good thoughts, guys. You two don't have anything tonight? You guys always got something. Okay, go in Nolan's class. I invited you to stick around because I knew you would chip in. No. you guys are good. Do you guys want to read the other passages real quick, and we'll get what we get? I'm gonna use my cheater here.
Well, isn't it safe to say too that in our times they ridicule and make fun of the true church?
Oh yeah. Yep. Look forward to the day when the kingdoms of this world become the kingdom of our Christ, right? But until then, yeah. And the church is, that's why we're, it's called the pillar and support of the truth. And so in many senses, guys, even Jesus, it's because of him. But now we get to do the same thing. We get to bear witness to the truth, don't we? We get to stand and take some of these same things that, because we've made that confession of who he is. So, all right, let's see here. Matthew 27:15-26. I'm going to have like a few people read in one shot. So, Will, you're definitely one of them. Matthew 27, sorry, you get to do 15-26. Mrs. Carson, because he were begging me to pick on you. Mark 15. Will you get Mark 15, 6-15 after? Well, let's see, Luke 23, 13-25. Rich, would you do that one? Luke 23, 13-25. And then John kind of starts earlier and we finish it later than we read, but I think we'll just, we've been tracking through John pretty good, so we'll leave John's. So, okay, we'll go for it.
Matthew 27:15. Now at the feast, the governor was accustomed to release for the people any one prisoner whom they wanted. At the time, they were holding a notorious prisoner called Barabbas. So when the people gathered together, Pilate said to them, "Whom do you want me to release, Barabbas or Jesus who is called Christ?" For he knew that because of envy that they had handed him over. While he was sitting on the judgment seat, his wife sent him a message saying, "Have nothing to do with this righteous man, for last night I suffered greatly in a dream because of him." But the chief priests and the elders persuaded the crowd to ask for Barabbas to put Jesus to death. But the governor said to them, "Which of the two do you want me to release for you?" And they said, "Barabbas." Pilate said to them, "Then what shall I do with Jesus who is called Christ?" They said, "Crucify him." And he said, "Why? What evil has he done?" But they kept shouting all the more, saying, "Crucify him." When Jesus saw that he was accomplishing nothing, but rather that a riot was starting, he took water and washed his hands in front of the crowd, saying, "I am innocent of this man's blood. See that you yourself." And all the people said, "His blood shall be on us and on our children." Then he released Barabbas to them, but after having Jesus scourged, he handed him over to be crucified.
Okay. Mark 15:6-15, Mrs. Carson. What did I say, Luke 23:13-25?
Pilate summoned the chief priests and the rulers and the people, and said to them, "You brought this man to me as one who incites the people to rebellion. And behold, having examined him before you, I have found no guilt in this man regarding the charges which you make against him. No, nor has Herod, for he sent him back to us, and behold, nothing deserving death has been done by him. Therefore, I will punish him and release him." Now he was obliged to release to them at the feast one prisoner. But they cried out all together, saying, "Away with this man, release for us Barabbas." He was one who had been thrown into prison for an insurrection made in the city and for murder. Pilate, wanting to release Jesus, addressed them again. But they kept on calling out, saying, "Crucify, crucify him." And he said to them the third time, "Why? What evil has this man done? I have found in him no guilt demanding death. Therefore, I will punish him and release him." But they were insistent, with loud voices, asking that he be crucified, and their voices began to prevail. And Pilate pronounced sentence that their demand be granted. And he released the man they were asking for, who had been thrown into prison for insurrection and murder, but he delivered Jesus.
Jesus to their will.
So one of the reasons I wanted to read those is if you look at Matthew's and Mark's account specifically, you kind of get the impression, if you're just reading it chronologically, you get the impression that Pilate releases Barabbas, then has Jesus scourged, and then he delivers him up to be crucified. But when you get in John's account, I think you get a little more information as to what's going on. Why? Have you guys ever thought about, okay, when Jesus actually carries the cross, it is a long trek. The way I've figured it from the scriptures is a good 3-hour trek with that cross. But he can't, I mean, the body is shutting down. He can't carry that thing without help. Why is Jesus' body shutting down? I mean, I'm sure the cross was heavy.
But
there was a lot of stuff he'd undergone before he got to that point. So, you know, he was up all night. Okay, I don't know what sort of food they were giving him, but probably not. I don't know how you guys get when you're actually. Okay, what did you say? Yeah, hangry, I think they call it. So Caleb and I did our once a year golfing the other night. Went to the par 3, and neither one of us had eaten. And Caleb started doing really bad and got frustrated, and then I got frustrated, and we were like, we didn't totally tank. We got back up, but we realized, like, we're really hungry too, and this is not helping. Okay? So I'm sure Jesus' blood sugars aren't great. My other story, the middle of the night, one of our kids, hey, our last kid, Kalia, right? They're working on Julie and want me to help them with something. I think they were giving her the epidural and they wanted me to help. And the next thing you know, I remember, like, I'm stretched down on the couch and they're taking care of me. I'm blaming it on low blood sugars in the middle of the night. But, like, you're not... It's tough being the husband, Billy. Don't laugh. Okay? That's the truth, too. It could happen. But, you know, so Jesus got all that going on. But also, John, what you're talking about, his how many of you guys have seen The Passion of Christ? I honestly think it's definitely got some Catholic overtones, but I think it's worth showing. Go back with me for a second to Isaiah 52. I mean, I think sometimes you say, well, it was kind of extreme, or... And I might think that, except for this verse from Isaiah 52. You guys all know Isaiah 53, right? It's like one of the most popular, greatest, amazing prophecies of all time of the Christ. It's beautiful. But look what he says in Isaiah 52, verse 14. Nikki, you want to read that? Isaiah 52, 14? His appearance was marred more than any man, and his form more than the sons. Like, I basically get the impression that, like, they beat him beyond recognition. So I do believe, you know, when I saw that movie, The Passion of Christ, and there's some weird stuff that starts going on, they kind of get caught up in the taunting and the... But, okay, where I want to not lose track of where I'm going with this. I think from, I want to come back to that, from John's account, the impression I get, Pilate is doing everything he can to let this guy off. He doesn't want... He offers... I mean, who are you going to choose? The murderer who was inciting, you know, insurrection, rebellion in the city? Or this guy who's some sort of political enemy? The crowds hopefully are going to say, we don't want a murderer. Let this guy... That doesn't work. Okay? So now, okay, well, I'll punish him. Let me appease him. Let me appease these guys. So we're going to send him off to be scourged. And then they do. And I literally think it's a... Sometimes there's something in the fleshly side of man that really hates excellence in somebody else. So these guys got their job. You know, the way this works, you can think about sometimes soldiers or something, they're trained to kill, kill, kill. They got this guy, they're going to punish him. He's not probably... cursing back. He's not cursing back at them. He's probably not doing the things they expect him to do. Okay, they're getting more riled up. Do you guys remember, I think it was Iraq, early 2000s, we had some soldiers that got in a bunch of trouble because of the way they treated prisoners at this, I forget the name of the place. So, Abu, yeah. Abu Ghraib. Yes, that's the place. I can't say it very well, but that's the place. So, like, it just tells, like, when you're, like, this is your job. This is what you, and you get all sorts of weird stuff can come out. I think they beat him way beyond probably what Pilate expected. But maybe even Pilate said, hey, if we give it to this guy enough, it's going to, okay, he's been punished enough, let him go. So the impression I get, and I'll let you guys sort this, but the impression I get is that Pilate actually has him scourged a little earlier than what you would get from Matthew and Mark's account. I think they're just referring back like, okay, here's the high points. Barabbas gets released, Jesus gets scourged, and Jesus gets crucified. But it's just the high points of this. I think Pilate, every step along the way, is trying to get Jesus off. Okay, and then he comes back out. Yeah, Dave.
Well, I was just curious, and I don't know if you have the answer, but what was he afraid of the Jews? What was Pilate so afraid of that he would just say, I'm just going to let it go?
So,
what was he afraid of them?
Good question. So, the way the government system worked at that point in time, like Rome is in charge. Their soldiers are marching in the streets. If you guys have ever seen, Trent, you ever see the old movie Ben-Hur? The old Ben-Hur movie? Like that's a good one, guys. If you haven't seen that, it's worth watching. But it kind of gives you the idea. Like these guys, they're in control, but they also let the Jews have some control as long as they behaved. Pay your taxes. Don't cause us problems. Well, the history of the Jews, they don't always behave really well when there's somebody's slaves. So they're kind of all... So Pilate, and I just know this from a little bit of extra history, he'd already been involved in a Jewish insurrection prior to this. So he's probably already got political pressure like, hey, you make those guys behave. So he sees... Like, everything that he puts out here, the Jews were a step ahead of him on. Like, even when... Like, the whole idea of Barabbas, they anticipated that, and they had planted guys in the street shouting, crucify him, crucify him. So they were... So everywhere Pilate goes, he sees it. Now, if we read through the end of John, you're going to see they end up getting him on this thing. Word is going to get back to Caesar, a guy who claimed to be king. You had him, you let him go, and now we have this huge rioting in the streets in Jerusalem because you let a guy that claimed to be a king, that's competition for Caesar, you let that guy go. And so that's the squeeze they put on him. Pilate himself, personally, I think there's enough going there that he's thinking, like, I don't want to do this. Does that make sense? Any other thoughts you got? Leah?
Yeah, just looking at
Yeah, when they start, you know, they start punching him too, blindfolding him, punching him, ripping out his beard. You know, tell us who it is that hit you. Like, I mean, this is a lot of... And then that crown of thorns. Like, you guys know, you ever get a head wound? Like, those things bleed. Okay. There was actually a band, I think, that had a song. I think the band was called Seven Places, and they had a song called Seven Places. And it was kind of interesting, but then I actually thought about it scripturally. There's one place where the scripture describes the blood that Jesus was shed, and that's in his death when the soldier... Like, that's the blood that was shed for our sins. But there was a lot of bleeding going on before that. Hey. Exactly. Can you imagine that? So, good question. Hey, do you guys remember how many times were the Jews allowed to scourge somebody? According to the law. 40. But they always did it 39 in case they miscounted. They didn't want to break the law, right? And so that's why Paul would say, five times I received from the Jews 39 lashes. That's the way they did it. So it's in Deuteronomy, he says 40 times is the most you're allowed to do it. So they do 39 just in case, like be on the safe side. But guys, the Romans aren't going by that rule. They're not limiting themselves to 39 times. And like I say, that's the Passion of Christ, I think it just ripping that thing to shreds. And that, so you're going into shock. Like, I'll work on myself for a second, being hangry. Like, that, there's no excuse. Okay? Jesus is beat. I mean, his body's done. That thing's going in shock. And still, the way he conducts himself with his, the way he treats everybody perfectly through this whole thing, like, this is a great example, too, for all of us. Brad, what else do you have?
No, I was just going to say, can you imagine going through his mind when this is all going on? You know, I mean, how he felt, you know, rejection like that, you know, by his own people. And, I mean, you know, that had to bring him kind of down, too, even though he knew his purpose and everything, still.
That would get to me probably as much or more than anything else. You know, when Isaiah 53 calls him Man of Sorrows, we get that hymn, Man of Sorrows, what a name. But Jesus understood what it, you know, to be betrayed by Judas, your other best friends leave you, abandon you. This is the way the world, like, and he knew he was doing it for us. But two other things I'll just say out of the Passion of Christ. There's a picture in that movie of in the garden, like basically Satan, they kind of show Satan coming to Jesus and basically saying, you can't do this. Like, you can't. There is a lot riding on this. You're going to take on all the sins of the world and the way you're going to be treated. Like, that's a lot mentally and emotionally to go through. So I think that's a really good point, Brad. The one thing I can assure you, though, that the Passion is wrong is they show, as he's carrying the cross and stuff, like having flashbacks to his mom and that kind of stuff, and stuff he did. The scripture is clear. It was for the joy set before him. He endured the cross, despising the shame. He is looking ahead. And he's understanding, like, he's going to rescue us through these things. So.
I mean, he obviously had a battle that he had won. Because, I know for me, like, if I'm going through a challenge and I start thinking negative about it, I mean, for Jesus to hang on the cross and say forgive them for they know how to do, I mean, it's pretty hard to go to be thinking negative thoughts and then make to that point and be like, you know, he had to have been mentally in the right spot to be able to look out and say forgive for them.
Definitely.
The other thing about then him carrying that cross, I mean, his back was tore up. I mean, just the splinters of that thing or whatever, however that thing, that rough on
and the nerves and.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Definitely. And if you guys remember the mindset thing you're talking about from John 17, you see that in Jesus' prayer in John 17. His mind was set. And he's still, like, that's, they cross Kidron, and then they go into the garden, you know, and then we got prayers and, you know, ongoing prayer, but, like, Jesus' mind was set. And he's in John 17, he's praying to the Father, like, in his mind, he isn't giving himself any outs. Like, this, it is finished. Like, I am, the work you've given me, I'm doing it. He's running through that finish line. And that's a really good point. Because, yeah, if you, there's one of my old favorite songs, Old Man's Rubble. And there's this line in there that deep within you, there's a spiritual battle. There's the voice of the darkness and the voice of the light. And just by listening, you've made your decision. Because the voice you hear is going to win the fight. And I understand that. Like, whichever one you listen to, when you start going, Jesus didn't go down that wrong path at all. He was set before he ever got there. So I haven't even started on my notes and we got 10 minutes left. Anything else you guys got? Emily.
Thank you.
Like, I know that the limit there is, like, we'll take the judgment. But his blood was on them and their children. Like, what they used for evil, like, from what they had thought in their mind for evil, he knew was what was going to be to take.
Yeah, they're saying let the guilt be on us, but the words they use, like his blood on us and on our children, and like you're saying, that blood actually that Jesus shed used to cover us from our sins. That's a cool point. That's a good pickup. All right, what do we got in the notes here? Yeah, we covered that. Yeah, covered that. Good job, guys. I do find it interesting. Do you guys remember what was the requirement for the Passover lamb? Just a couple of unblemished. That's the one I was looking for. Unblemished lamb. Because even the Roman governor can sit here and assess and say, this guy, there's no guilt in him. I'm no guilt in him. He is innocent. And the fulfillment of that scripture, the unblemished lamb for us. And I'm really appreciative what you guys are, like, as we're talking about this tonight, because I'm kind of thinking, I'm getting the impression like we're all kind of putting ourselves in Jesus' shoes a little bit that night and what he went through. And I think it's super important that we do that because, I think it should make us aware of the price of sin. Like my sins. I keep coming up with the passion tonight, but one of my favorite things, Mel Gibson shows up one place in that movie. It's his hand, his nailing, the spikes, and the communication he's making is my sins. And to think about what Jesus went through for me, what he went through for you, that's pretty intense. So the price of sin and the love, like you were saying, that he had for us, definitely worth thinking about. And it should, Mikkel, if we understand what that means, this is the Son of God, and this is the Christ, and this is the King, then when we're faced with really difficult choice, because let's face it, Pilate's faced with a tough choice. Like he's basically in a lose, lose, lose. And sometimes, like, the way the world boxes us in, the way the devil does, like, it looks like that for us. But, like you were saying, if you really understood who he was. Guys, when you think about what Jesus has done for us, and we know he's the Lord, we know he's the Son of God, and we think about what he's done for us, like, who cares if you lose here? You win forever. And doesn't he deserve that from us? So, let's step up and make the right choices in our pressure moments. It is kind of interesting that when you read the Gospels, like you see the religious rulers, like they hated Jesus from early on in his ministry. Like, do you remember when I think this is early as Mark 2 or Matthew 9, where Jesus heals the man who is paralyzed, the guy that they let down. There's some guys that are sitting there I call them the front row boys, like, who's this guy think he is? You know, who can forgive sins but God alone? Like, they're sitting there watching him, like, trying to wait for him to make a mistake. He doesn't know when he healed on the Sabbath. And remember, as early as John 3, Nicodemus, when he comes to Jesus by night, listen carefully to what he says. He says, we know that you're from God. He didn't say, I know. He says, we know, talking about his fellow Pharisees. Like, we know who you are, but they hated him for exposing who they were. And so, this has been building for a long time. And that's why I think when it comes up to this point in time, I mean, you guys remember, we've gone through the Gospel of John, the times that he escapes, you know, the end of John chapter 8, you know, he walks out the temple, you know, there, hides himself from them, etc. Like, this is their moment. They've got the payoff. You know, they've paid off Judas. They have every single angle covered here. going into this. And so, like I said, even the plaints in the streets shouting, "Crucify him, crucify him." Hey, I do not want this to go into a political discussion, Nate. But let's just say this: you don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure out that a lot of the protesting that's going on in our present society right now, people are getting paid to do a lot of that, to be the ringleaders of it. Nothing changes. Okay? It's the way it's always worked. So these guys are set up to do that. So I do want to just mention for a second, the one thing the Jews that they missed, that they couldn't ever wrap their mind around here, was that Jesus could be the Son of God. Can anybody tell me, like, what were some pretty important... Can you think of one important passage maybe from the Old Testament that they might have missed? That's like for us, it's simple, because we got the whole New Testament. It's revealed to us, and we see it, and we, like, okay, yeah, we know. He's the Son of God. Lena, what were you telling me? First part of Romans 1 declared... How was he declared to be the Son of God? Yeah, he's declared the Son of God of the resurrection. So we're after the resurrection. It's pretty easy to see this. But at that time, if you're there, somebody claiming to be the Son of God, they, like I said, they thought of that as blasphemy, but they missed some scriptures. Can anybody think of any passages? There's some hints there. It'd be a little tough, but like, come let us make man in our image, according to our likeness. Who's this us? That would be a good question. Maybe some appearances. If you know, there's some little hints like that. Some appearances of Jesus. They didn't know as Jesus, but to Abraham, you know, he did tell them, by the way, before Abraham was born, "I am." And he told them, "Abraham rejoiced to see my day." But there's a couple of really clear ones. As soon as I say this one, you guys will know it.
Isaiah.
Let's go to Isaiah 9 really quickly. Actually, I like the three famous prophecies of Jesus' birth. Every one of them. Micah, where he's going to be born in Bethlehem. But it closes with, "His goings forth are from long ago, from the days of eternity." That should be like... What does that mean? This guy who's going to be the king has been going about from the days of eternity? Like, that should be a clunk, right? How about the prophecy of the virgin is going to be with child and bear a son, and they should call his name Emmanuel? That means God with us. But Isaiah 9, this one's a tough one to miss. Of course, I don't think they read this chapter. I know it wasn't broken into chapters the way it was, but they missed the earlier part too, that he was going to have ministry in Galilee. But Isaiah 9:6, "A child will be born to us, a son will be given to us, and the government will rest on his shoulders, and his name will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Eternal Father, Prince." Like, that should make you go, how can the son that's born be this Mighty God, Eternal Father? All right, one final thought tonight. So Pilate's here. You think Pilate actually had some guts? He resists. Like, there are three different times. A lesser man would have caved in a lot quicker than Pilate did. Like, there were some things that were bothering him. This guy's innocent. He might be the Son of God. My wife has a dream. Like, I don't want to. So he fights it off, but in the end, he caves because of pressure. And I was thinking about that, because God is amazing. God, He is so sovereign. Like, Pilate still had free will in this, but God knows the kind of guy Pilate was, and He just happens to have him be there as the governor in Judea at that time and place in history. God's plan is going to be done. Like, it was God's plan for Jesus to be crucified. Pilate's making some bad choices, and through those bad choices, God's will is still being done. Now, let's think about this from a positive perspective. You guys remember Esther? There's a great question that gets asked. You know, Mordecai, basically says, you know, how do you know whether or not you've been born for such a time as this? So I want you guys to think, like, in God's plan, in His, where He's going, like, why are you here? Why are you alive at this time, at this place in history? If God could take Pilate and his bad choices and turn those for great things, what do you think God can do through His people when we'll stand and make right choices for Him? So, just want you to think about who you are and why you're here right now. John Moranczyk, would you close us with a word of prayer, bud?
Creator of the universe, we praise your name and hold it on the highest. Lord, thank you for these evenings that you've given great sons, accomplishments, and what you've done for us. Pray that we would be mindful of this as we go through the week and bring the truth to others.
Amen.